Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and this is Hank Jones Poly Sports. I am sorry for the very short notice and the suddenness, but I am pre-recording this show. We have a family emergency. My wife's having to travel out of town. Please pray for her and her family as they deal with what has obviously become end of life for her mother. So, we've got a lot to cover, and I still wanted to cover it this week. There's obviously no live stuff this week as far as phone calls or anything, but again, you can always reach me at hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Find me on Facebook at Hank Jones Poly Sports or on Twitter at hpolysports. And, of course, during normal times, you can call in and listen to the show or talk at 319-527-6706. I am here in Electric Hank Land with the little Aussie while my wife is working over in Acoustic Hank Land and working on flights, unfortunately. Quick to the obits, last Thursday, we lost Brian Binney at age 69. He was a former U.S. Navy pilot and later a test pilot for some private space ventures. He was the pilot on the initial flight of Spaceship One. He later flew the second Spaceship One flight, setting a record for highest altitude for a winged aircraft in suborbital flight, breaking the record which had been held, by the way, by the venerable X-15 for almost 40 years. So Brian Binney, not widely known, but a true American space and aviation hero, gone at 69, very sad. And then Friday we lost actress and singer Marva Hicks with no age or cause of death listed. She appeared on TV shows L.A. Law, Mad About You, House of Cards, and one of my favorites, The Blacklist. She was also on the soap opera One Life to Live for two seasons. Her biggest single, Never Been in Love Before, actually reached number 7 on the R&B chart. Sunday we lost Wally Tatamere at age 76. Wally Tatamere was a longtime equipment manager in hockey, primarily with the Hartford Whalers, who became the Carolina Hurricanes. He also had 4 patents on various pieces of hockey equipment, 3 of them skate-related. And then Monday, just looking through, I didn't really see anything really notable, but it doesn't mean there wasn't. And let me just refresh. I'll look through again while we're on here. But nobody really that I had known that jumped out at me. We did have a diplomat, Ambassador to Togo, Marilyn Johnson, pass away at the age of 100. She was ambassador during the end of the Carter years. We also did lose that day. I forgot. Maury Wills, former Major League Baseball player, had, stolen base record for a while for the year and possibly career. Those both were broken first by Lou Brock and then later by Ricky Henderson. Maury Wills was 89, played for the Dodgers and later the Pirates, and was a manager for the Seattle Mariners early in their existence. And yesterday, definitely nothing of any note. And so, thus far today, nothing of any note in terms of, although there was one, Daryl Mudra, former football coach, American Hall of Fame college coach, coached at North Dakota State, University of Arizona, and Eastern Illinois University. I just knew of him because he was, of course, in the Midwest where I grew up. But that's it really for our obituaries this week. Nothing really major, thank God. And, of course, I'll give a shout-out to my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and answering service for your clinic, your information gathering services, your hospital, government, agency, service company, real estate management. Give them a call, 800-555-3738, or visit them on the web at alliancecommunications.com. Again, they are a company that likes to work with remote staff. So quickly, things I didn't get to last week, or thing. So far, the Inflation Reduction Act has worked. Oh, wait, no, it hasn't. Inflation numbers for August showed an 8.3% increase year over year from last August. And let's face facts, that number is so cherry-picked. The whole damn cherry orchard is empty. Yes, I get it. Certain items are backed out. Guess what? They happen to back out the items that hurt average Americans the most, like food, gas, certain utilities. This is, of course, the classic imprint of a third Barack Obama term. He backed out numbers that were very essential to knowing in terms of inflation. Stocks are getting crushed with barely any positive movement on rebound days. The Fed is expected to raise interest rates another 75 basis points. Food prices continue to rise. And, of course, La Dopey Nostra is now taking credit for recent drops in gas prices. Although, guess what? We are seeing increases in gas prices in certain areas. Some of the concessions made to induce Joe Manchin's vote in favor of it, yeah, they're being pulled back or even dropped. Way to go, Joe. That's both Joes, Manchin and Dopey. So, yeah, all in all, I'm calling this one early as a massive fail. Onward. Herm Edwards is out as head coach at Arizona State. He came in with the same type of bluster as Scott Frost did at Nebraska and then eventually lost staff. He lost players. He lost assistant coaches with a rather odd outlook about recruiting violations and an NCAA investigation. Also similar to Scott Frost, he started this season 1-2 with a humiliating loss to a non-Power 5 team, Eastern Michigan. Now, as a side note, that team featured a guy who was never on the two deeps at Iowa, a senior running back by the name of Samson Evans. He had never rushed for more than 89 yards a game in his career. So against Arizona State, Samson Evans carried 36 times for 258 yards. Running backs coach Sean Aguano will take over, presumably for the rest of this season. Now, here's a big problem for ASU. Many head coach candidates will be very leery about taking a head coach job at a program that has hemorrhaged staff and players. Here's a bigger problem for Arizona State. Even more candidates will be very leery about taking a job at a program under investigation, especially with the evidence attached to the NCAA's investigation notes, which includes a handwritten note that reads, "I am writing this letter to inform you about recruiting violations that are occurring at Arizona State in their football department. My objective is providing enough information to assure you if ASU football is looked into, there will be violations found." That all but says, I don't like Herm Edwards, and I don't really care about the consequences for Arizona State football if an investigation takes place. Now, this is compounded by the fact that Arizona State's athletic director, Ray Anderson, used to be Herm Edwards' agent. Herm Edwards also hired a defensive coordinator by the name of Antonio Pierce, who is also a subject in the investigation, and he allowed Pierce to all but run the program. Pierce alienated other assistant coaches as well as staffers and even some players. Maybe the biggest problem for Arizona State, Pac-12 is losing two of its marquee schools, USC and UCLA, to the Big Ten in 2024. Now, other Pac-12 schools have all but begged the Big Ten for membership. And of the remaining Pac-12 schools, it might be Big Ten material. Arizona State, certainly not one of them. They bring zero. Maybe the Phoenix market, but with L.A. market, who cares? At best, Arizona State winds up in some amalgamation of the Big 12 and Pac-12. Sans the marquee programs from those respective conferences, i.e. Texas and Oklahoma from the Big 12. And, of course, as I mentioned, UCLA and USC from the Pac-12. Frankly, Arizona State's only poaching opportunity right now, maybe coaches from some of those schools that are remaining. As for Herm Edwards, at 68 years old and with an NCAA investigation on his resume, he really only has one career choice left with regard to coaching. That would be an NFL assistant. He may get looks as a head coach via the Rooney Rule, which requires teams to interview minority candidates for job openings as head coach, coordinator, or GM. But no team will actually take the risk of hiring him. Now, however, as an on-air analyst, he probably has a future as he's previously worked in that capacity for 9 or 10 years and did a pretty good job. Much like Urban Meyer, he sucks at many facets of the human side of coaching. As an analyst, those facets in which he is lacking are meaningless to the job of color analyst. So, yeah, he could be a nice pickup for Fox Sports or ESPN or one of those. Up next, this is sort of a multi-part story on the illegal relocation, illegal alien relocation done by Governor Greg Abbott of Texas and Ron DeSantis of Florida. First, Governor Abbott has been busing some of the illegals captured in Texas, as well as some of those who have been unceremoniously dumped there by the La Dopey Nostra, to the residence of Vice President and Dopey Joe appointed border czar Kamala Harris. The VP resides at the Naval Observatory. Yeah, other destinations include New York City and, of course, the most publicized, Martha's Vineyard. The one to Martha's Vineyard was pulled off brilliantly, by the way, as evidenced by the reaction from Big Left by Florida Governor DeSantis primarily. It's really amazing. Sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, so named by their respective leaders, are getting what they claim they want, i.e. unfettered entry into the U.S., with no reprisals for it occurring. Aha. But there seems to be a problem. It seems the latest destination, Martha's Vineyard, isn't as welcoming as their posted signs that they have throughout the area. The illegal aliens are quite upsetting to what is called the richest community in America, where the annual average income is just south of $133,000 a year. The median home price is over $1.2 million. So you'd think there'd be plenty of room in the area. Now, adding to that, Martha's Vineyard receives roughly 150,000 to 200,000 residents each year. So again, one could assume there is an abundance of hotel rooms, Airbnbs, VRBOs, and extended stay places and the like. Absorbing 50 people should not only be simple, but given its self-ascribed status as a sanctuary that welcomes everyone, one would think the people of Martha's Vineyard, as well as big media, would be all over it. You know, all the sharing of riches, lavish meals at the various million-dollar residences, and, of course, all the clothing that the Obama girls no longer need, and just how darling and adorable it looks on their new neighbors. Alas, no. Big media could get was the handing out of food bags and, of course, lots of hugs, as the folks in Martha's Vineyard, after summoning the National Guard, summarily popped them on a bus and sent them off to some military installation. Yep. They need 125 National Guard soldiers to look after 50 illegals. Oh, and Joint Base Cape Cod probably ain't as nice as Martha's Vineyard. Then again, it's probably a lot nicer than, say, Alcatraz or Gitmo. Second, here's a list, courtesy of a Patriot Alert, PatriotAlerts.com, of seven fun things illegal migrants can do this month in Martha's Vineyard. And here they are. In all their glory, seven fun things illegal migrants can do in Martha's Vineyard this month. Number one, take a ferry to Nantucket. Absolutely. Gaze across the glistening water at Cape Cod. And if they got $41, they can also take a one-way trip to Nantucket via ferry. You heard about the man from Nantucket, of course, to see more glistening water through October. Two, visit the lighthouses. Martha's Vineyard is home to five historic lighthouses. Three, they can go to a public beach. There are several easily accessible beaches, and one, including one little-known nude beach called Moshup Beach or Moshup Beach, which is located over by the Gay Head Lighthouse and cliffs on the west side. Four, they can take advantage of off-season restaurant deals. The post-Labor Day lull is a prime time to visit Martha's Vineyard when tourism has died down, but restaurants and shops remain open, according to a Chamber of Commerce post on their blog. Five, they can see famous settings from Jaws, including the bridge that connects Edgartown and Oak Bluffs. Six, they can buy Black Dog or Vineyard Vines clothing. There are several stores that sell apparel by Black Dog and Vineyard Vines, two companies whose recognizable logos originated in Martha's Vineyard. The Black Labrador Boxer Mix from Black Dog, or the cute little whale from Vineyard Vines. Seven, of course, they can check out Chappaquiddick Island. The island known for its beaches, Cape Pogue Lighthouse, trails, birdwatching, lack of internet, and a rather infamous 1969 incident in which Senator Ted Kennedy, President JFK's brother, negligently drove his car off a bridge, which resulted in the death of a 28-year-old campaign aide by the name of Mary Jo Kopechne. So yeah, seven fun things illegals can do in Martha's Vineyard. Third, we also have this from PatriotAlerts.com. Rather interesting. Venezuelan migrants stop AOC and thank Ron DeSantis for sending them to Martha's Vineyard. Not angry at Ron DeSantis, they are actually thanking him that they were brought to paradise. Yikes. So, of course, Big Left is calling this criminal. Some are calling it human trafficking. My God. The richness of irony never ceases to amaze me. So in that vein, here are a couple of headlines that popped up after the new arrivals were blithely dumped. First, from Yahoo, Martha's Vineyard residents lament lack of resources, even as island is flush with cash and beds. My take, of course, what resources could be so lacking that it necessitated a call to the National Guard? NPR, migrants on Martha's Vineyard flight say they were told they were going to Boston. My thought there, that's almost as bad as being told you're going to Chicago and then you end up in Lake Forest or Kenilworth. And this one from CNN, they enriched us. Migrants' 44-hour visit leaves indelible mark on Martha's Vineyard. My observation here, the beauty here, of course, is that neither the network nor the people they interviews realize just how dumb that sounds. And what they really don't realize is just how bad that can be interpreted as their actual true feelings, as in, my God, we had to endure that for a whole 44 hours. I mean, seriously, that could have been a headline that could have been a chapter in the preppy handbook. Seriously, I can just hear Buffy, Cuffy, and Muffy Tidewater schmoozing over a Starbucks. My God, Mommy and Daddy made us mingle with those people. The hypocrisy, sadly, is utterly lost on Big Left. They actually believe, en masse, that this paints them in some sort of positive light. It's literally the shining pinnacle some of the liberals at my old church dreamed about. I mean, you know, the ones that don't want the church giving out food because doing so, quote-unquote, attracts that element, or the ones who blather on about being kind but never show up when the church is serving at a soup kitchen, or the ones who can't believe that their church sends money for African mission when, by God, the carpet in the fellowship hall needs replaced. Oh, and the first paragraphs of the CNN article, trust me, that would make you puke and laugh. I mean, seriously, they're talking about like how indelible it is and just the impressions left. Like one woman who thought the videos and photos that one of the women shared on her cell phone on her journey from Venezuela. Seriously. Their whirlwind 44-hour visit. I mean, it's, they act like they were kidnapped. It's just, it's unbelievable. One, Lisa Bel Castro, winter shelter coordinator for the Harbor Homes nonprofit, was close to tears about an hour after the migrants left the island on Friday, with volunteers beginning to clean up the parish house and church hall where the newcomers slept. I mean, this, my friends, is what we are dealing with in this country. Call it multi-level marketing of idiocy. Because that's what it is. Not only are these phony, insincere Martha's Vineyardians embarrassing themselves, but CNN actually mass markets it with the implication that you, too, will become an elite by getting mad at rational behavior to justify the most inhuman and irrational behavior that they propagate. I mean, perhaps Governor DeSantis, describing the reaction of Big Left, said it best. Here's what he said. It just shows you, you know, their virtue signaling is a fraud. Bingo. Moving on. Ex-Minneapolis police officer Thomas Lane, and no, Mike and Jamie, not that Lane family, has taken a plea deal in the state prosecution of the George Floyd case. He was already sentenced to 2.5 years in the federal case for violation of Floyd's civil rights. Frankly, I have no problem with that. In the state case, his plea deal results in a 3-year sentence, the result of a guilty plea to second-degree manslaughter. The two sentences will run concurrently versus consecutively. Then again, it's Minnesota, and it's a civil rights case, so who knows if the judge presiding over the case, despite both prosecutors and defense attorneys signing off on it, will allow the deal. Now, he has, at least for now, even though the agreement calls for a term below sentencing guidelines. Judge Peter Cahill allowed it because, as he said to Lane directly, Lane has accepted responsibility for his role in the incident. But, remember I said this, but, this is the state of Ilhan Omar. This is a state where Barack Obama will have no trouble amassing objections, fomenting riots, and sanctioning destruction from among its residents. So keep following this. And do not be surprised if the plea deal is rejected. Now, the other white cop involved, Derek Chauvin, is already serving at least 20 years. The two minority cops, who have received federal sentences similar to Lane's, are still awaiting state trials and have yet to report further federal sentences. The reason I say note this, though, is that Lane did his plea deal remotely while already serving his federal sentence. Something is not right with all this, in my humble opinion. So, Dopey Joe, in one of his softball interviews on 60 Minutes that he still managed to, in the words of his former boss and current puppeteer Barack Obama, fuck it up, declared the pandemic to be over. Great news, right? Except, as noted by L. Purnell on the Federalist website, this means the Department of Education no longer has, quote, emergency conditions, unquote, to cite in forgiving student loan debt. It also caused a meltdown within big media and greater big left. Why? Should they not be happy about 19 pandemic coming to an end? One would think that would be the case. But, however, this causes problems for big left. First, as L. Purnell noted, there is no longer an emergency under which student loan debt can be forgiven. There is no longer an emergency which can halt collection of rents, collection of back rents, or collection of overdue mortgages. There is no longer an emergency under which certain facilities can require masks, vaccinations, or booster shots just so one can go about his or her daily life. There is no longer an emergency that should be resulting in log jams in supply chains, a troubled labor market, and the ongoing quest by some workers to live the remainder of their lives on extended unemployment or government handouts. But what's the biggest problem in the collective twisted mind of Big Left? You got it, I'm sure. I'm sure you got it. Big Left can no longer cite an emergency to justify mail-in voting. Can no longer justify random or more accurately strategically placed drop boxes. Big Left can no longer excuse the illegality of ballot harvesting, can no longer pretend that boxes of miscellaneous ballots should be summarily dismissed, and can no longer scream that voting rights are being denied, not that voting rights were ever denied. But now there is no emergency under which Big Left can formulate any obstacle to normal, previously used election procedures. Suffice it to say, stay tuned for blue states declaring local COVID fake emergencies or monkeypox or something. Here's some of L. Purnell's article. I'm just going to read something that she wrote near the end of it because it's pretty astute. Tell you why I say this. She says, now, if the pandemic is over, as Biden has finally acknowledged, doesn't that mean Biden's education department can no longer use it as a national emergency to try to justify this power grab? Even if the HEROES Act could legally be stretched to include COVID-related student debt handouts, Biden just rendered his own agency's legal argument null. It's also senseless to declare the pandemic any more over now than it was less than a month ago. Daily COVID cases and deaths have not really changed much. He himself Biden himself had previously expressed doubts about his ability to do this multiple times. Nancy Pelosi agreed with him. The illegality of Biden's student debt forgiveness was no secret to anyone with a working knowledge of the U.S. Constitution. But Biden's admission on 60 Minutes suggests that it's no secret to him either. Brilliantly put. Brilliantly put. If you ask me, anyway. Former UCLA basketball player Jalen Hall has died. Jalen Hall had gone missing in Costa Rica. He was just 22. Jalen Hall, a 6'10" forward, was one of three UCLA players arrested for shoplifting while on a team trip to China in 2017 with one of the Ball brothers. I'm not sure which one, LaMelo or whatever. His final game for the Bruins was in January of 2021. The school announced that he was sitting out a game on February 6th for personal reasons. Played again for UCLA, and he missed the team's Final Four run in 2021. He announced in April 2021 that he was retiring from basketball, citing anxiety and depression. In that video, he noted that stepping back and reevaluating was, quote, a whole new life, and that he never felt so happy before. This is very sad news, especially since we haven't heard anything beyond the fact that Jalen Hall has died. Now, stating the obvious, he was too young to be taken. But, you know, it hurts even more, especially for family and close friends, that many details are not available. Rest in peace, young Jalen Hall. More of the Dopey Joe 60 Minutes interview. He says he's not sure if he'll 24. He also said he was not documents about the Trump raid at Mar-a-Lago. Now, Pelley also said, Mr. President, as you know, last Tuesday, the annual inflation rate came in at 8.3%. Stock market nosedived. People are shocked by their grocery bills. What can you do better and faster? This is what he said. Well, first of all, let's put this in perspective. Inflation rate month to month was just an inch, hardly at all. When pressed about a 40-year high, he argued, no, I'm not saying it's good news, but it was 8.2% or something like that before. I mean, it's not like we make it like sound like all of a sudden. He said he would defend Taiwan from an invasion by China, although, as Holger pointed out on Vito and Al's show Wednesday, we have no treaty with China that would necessitate that. And he said, we're going to stay with Ukraine as long as they need our help. No thanks, he said. He said he'd not been briefed about the alleged classified documents. He says I have not asked for the specifics of those documents because I don't want to get myself in the middle of whether or not the Justice Department should move or not move on certain actions they could take. Biden alleged, I agreed I would not tell them what to do and not, in fact, engage in telling them how to prosecute or not. Biden was asked, sir, are you committed to running again or are there certain conditions that have to be right? He said, look, if I were to say to you, I'm running again, all of a sudden a whole range of things comes into play that I have requirements I have to change and move and do. He added that because of election laws and other reasons, make it much too early to make that kind of decision. I'm a great respecter of fate, and so what I'm doing is I'm doing my job. I'm going to do that job, and within the time frame that makes sense after this next election cycle here, going into next year, make a judgment on what to do. Look, my intention, as I said to begin with, is that I would run again, but it's just an intention. But is it a firm decision that I run again? That remains to be seen. Yeah, it does. Seriously, this is what we have for another 2+ years. And if you think Dopey Joe losing in 2024 is a good thing, and it would be, don't forget, he would have 2+ months as a lame duck. The last 20 months will seem like a damn picnic if that becomes the case. The only thing scarier than another 4 years of Dopey Joe or any Democrat would be the period from November 6, 2024 to January 20th, 2025. Oh, and by the way, as an FYI, today a federal judge in Louisiana ruled that the federal vax mandate for Head Start, which is a pre-K education program that serves primarily impoverished youth, it's unconstitutional and cannot be enforced. This applies to students, teachers, and staff. In other words, had this been addressed 2 years ago, there would have been no ballot harvesting under the guise of health and safety. So an update on Yeshiva University post-SCOTUS ruling that they said they ruled too soon before the case had run its proper course. It seems Yeshiva University, rather than go against its own curriculum by ignoring the Old Testament and recognizing an LGBTQ plus group on its campus, has suspended all student activities groups. Good for them. Good for them. There's absolutely zero reason for a religious university to go against the very basis of its existence and its faith. A quick internet laughy before I take a quick break. Karine Jean-Pierre, press secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, is blindsided by a journalist asking a question. Classic stuff. Okay, I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be back and do my college football take. Be right back, folks. And we are back. I am Hank Jones with Hank Jones Polysports with an abbreviated impromptu show this week due to a family emergency for my wife's mother. My wife's mother is nearing the end of her life. My wife is having to fly up there, wants to fly up there to be with her in the last days. So I am recording this early so that I can get her to the airport in a timely manner. Back with some quick comments about college football. A couple games that jumped out this past week. Michigan, this is really Big Ten related, but Michigan State at Washington kind of surprised me. Now, look, although I felt Washington had the tools to win, and last week on the phone with Indy and Hawkeye Mike, I actually picked them, it's the way they won. They really had no problem with Michigan State on either side of the ball. And the 11-point margin didn't really tell the whole story. They led by as many as 22 throughout the game. They scored the first 22 points of the game. And I think Michael Penix, despite a somewhat poor year last year at Indiana, his transfer to Washington and is becoming the Washington starter, has jump-started that program and sort of reinvigorated his career. Now, the Syracuse win over Purdue was, to me, somewhat glorious. Look, I'm still pissed about Charlie Jones and the way he left Iowa. I love the fact that he is basically putting up what are, as Captain Kirk called them on Twitter, empty stats. And the way they lost, my God, it had to remind Purdue of some of the bogus calls they got against Iowa when we had phantom holds and terrible pass interference calls in recent games. And don't even ask me about Northwestern and their loss to Southern Illinois. I have no idea what is going on with them. On the other hand, they have had non-conference results like this in recent seasons, only to go on and actually win the Big Ten West. It's true. They actually have. So let's get to the Hawkeyes. What was good last Saturday against Nevada? Okay, several things. Number one, the offensive line opened up some holes in the running game, which was really good. It was enough for Spencer Petras to throw downfield, which helped open up the box and got us a good run game. The return of Keegan Johnson and Nico Reganey and the emergence and utilization of Brody Brecht, all of which provide, by the way, legit downfield options and all of which allow Arlen Bruce to be less of a focus to opposing defenses. That was really good. Torrey Taylor continues to be stellar in the punting game. What more can you say? The distance, he's putting him inside the 10-yard line. It's just amazing. The defense held Nevada scoreless and to a total of 151 yards. Now, some of the positive and negatives, you can chalk up to some weather situations. There were several rain delays. The game ended up taking about 7 hours. Also, the emergence of Caleb Johnson as a running threat, with legit ability to house it on the long runs. This is especially important in light of Gavin Williams having missed time and LaShawn Williams being out last week after the death of his father. Similar to 2019, when Tyler Goodson emerged as a freshman, we may be seeing that with Caleb Johnson. Now, Caleb Johnson's bigger than Tyler Goodson. I'm not sure he's got decent speed. I don't think he has Tyler Goodson speed, but I think it also shows when the line's doing its job, as it did in certain games with Tyler Goodson, and the holes are there, that the yards are there. A lot of people still talk about Tyler danced too much. I don't think he had much choice. Now, here's what concerned me. Offense still had timing issues, both on the offensive line and with some of the downfield throws. Now, some of that is understandable. They have not been practicing for long and have not had time to get back on the same page. But still, it just seems to me this needs to get – there's still a lot of work to be done. What also concerned me, I know the weather can be, say, a lot of it, and we didn't need to rack up yards, but we racked up 337 yards. That's less than any of us picked last week, Hawkeye Mike or Indy Hawk or myself. We gave up 150. That's, you can't ask more than that. But 337 yards, you would think, we would have racked up more. But I don't know. Now, on the other hand, as Captain Kirk talked about last week, would like to see us convert some third downs. We did more of that. We didn't do enough of it, but we did more of it than we've done. So that's improvement. You can't argue with that. And I think that's what we're going to have to do this week against Rutgers. I just don't see how we can expect to beat Rutgers if we're going to spend all our time watching our defense on the field. The other thing that's got to pick up, you know, I think there are still some defensive things that we need. We need to see Justin Jacobs back, I think. And with Jamari Harris being out for the year, yes, I'm confident in the defensive backfield, but that's always a depth issue. So I think we need to see Xavier Nwapa get more on the field other than just special teams or any of the others, frankly. But I really think Justin Jacobs is going to be needed. Look, Jack Campbell is still what makes that defense go. But from a big play standpoint, Justin Jacobs is crucial. And it's frankly, and it's depth. I wonder if we give up the kind of drive we give up against Iowa State with Justin Jacobs there. Now, again, talk about penalties that kind of ruined some of that. But I just don't know that without Justin Jacobs, that this defense gone away. I don't have a problem with Kyler Fisher. I think it is. No, not Kyler Fisher. Whatever. I don't have a problem with the linebackers that we're putting out there at all. You know, I think his replacement has done a creditable job. But what I'm saying, you know, there's a reason he was a starter. There's a reason Justin Jacobs was doing big things. It has done big things. And without him, I just think we are going to be facing some long-term issues. I don't know that it's going to, you know, he may be back this week. You just don't know. You know, did we really need him? I think we could have used him against Iowa State. But did we need him? I don't know. That's kind of hard to say. Jay Higgins has got a lot of time on the field. I'm Twitter buddies with his dad, Roy. Prayers be please, again for Roy and his family as he had to memorialize or eulogize his cousin. But Jay Higgins, again, got a lot of action. Kyler Fisher, I was right, he is the replacement. But Jay Higgins has got a lot of time. Now, Jay is listed as a backup to Jack Campbell, but he obviously in a lot. I'm not sure if it was in Justin's place or in Seth Benson's place. I'm pretty sure it was Seth Benson's place because of where he was lining up. And it might have been when they were doing going into the 42 and not using a cash, maybe. I don't know. Or using the cash, I'm sorry, and pulling Seth Benson and Kyler Fisher off. But either way, it's good to see Jay Higgins getting some time on the field. He's a junior, probably redshirt, might be a redshirt sophomore, but it'd be good to see Jay get more time because he's been spoken about that he's got some real talent. Logan Klimp as well has been getting time. That's who I think has been starting in place of Justin Jacobs. So, yeah, we need to see that. You know, maybe some of the freshmen will also start to emerge. Reggie Bracey is certainly emerging on special teams, but maybe he'll get some more time in the backfield, you know, proper. So I'd like to see some more depth development. Again, against Rutgers, I think we're going to have to sustain drives. They don't always have to result in touchdowns or even field goals, if we could just keep the defense off the field long enough. And that was another concern. We didn't dominate time of play. We really didn't. We did not dominate time of play against Nevada. Now, again, you know, there's a lot to about that. You know, the weather was awful. It was a 7-hour game. I mean, there were several lightning delays. Hawkeye Mike talked about it. You know, he was at the Iowa State game a couple of years ago when we went into a long delay. Let's just say that it's probably 7 hours as well, roughly. You know, they pull you out of the stadium. You know, basically, they limit it to a minimum of half an hour after last lightning strike to until there's any lightning, you know, if they until they don't see lightning in the area again. Well, God, you know, what constitutes the area? And really, what, you know, what's the safety measure? I'm not sure just where it goes from there. So, but time of possession, we did not dominate it. I mean, it, you know, it wasn't like a match. We were dominated in time of possession against Iowa State. We had like 38-22, something like that, something similar. We can't sustain that. We cannot sustain that, you know, game after game. That's not doable. Yeah, our time of possession, 6 second difference, 30-03 for them to 29-57 for us. But we can't sustain that through a Big Ten season. You know, like what we saw against Iowa State, which I believe, like I said, 38-22. That's just not going to work. It's one thing for your defense to be your shining star, to be the most important part of your, I guess you'd say, the most important part of your team. You know, I mean, this team does, it rests on its defense, but God, can it continue to do that? I don't know. I just don't see it. A defense is going to get like this, you know, they're going to get. You know, they were pretty much gassed on that last Iowa State drive. Now, again, there were some calls there that were really, really, you know, the unnecessary roughness on Cooper DeJean. That was awful. That was just awful. But there were some other calls, too. And time of possession there, 38-15 to 21-45. That's not going to happen. We are not going to be able to continue doing that. It's not going to happen. And unfortunately, I see that happening against some teams in the Big Ten. Now, against a Purdue, they're kind of quick strike. So you never know. That might play into our hand. But against Michigan, against Ohio State, oof, going to be a good thing. So let's get to this week's Big Ten games. Tomorrow night, Chattanooga, 3-0 Chattanooga, by the way, heads to Champaign to take on the Illini. Now, Chattanooga's, their schedule doesn't look too bad. They got wins over Wofford and Eastern Illinois and North Alabama. Okay, nothing special, but they're still 3-0. Co-lead in the Southern Conference. So, you know, Maryland goes to Michigan, 3-0 versus 3-0. I don't see anything much more than Michigan pretty much dominating the game. I know they're talking about, oh, Maryland is really coming into its own, and yeah, we'll see. I'm not sure that they have the game to stay with Michigan. I don't think so. Central Michigan heads to Penn State again, a 1-2 Central Michigan, who is just not that good a team. Penn State, I think, really is legit. Nick Singleton is putting up the yards. Is being Sean Clifford. Minnesota at Michigan State. Now, this is going to be interesting. One, the Gophers are going on the road. They're the only undefeated team left in the Big Ten West. Michigan State's coming off a pretty weird loss. Like I said, I was surprised how Washington sort of dominated them. But, boy, coming back to East Lansing, I got to believe the Gophers are going to definitely, it's the caliber of competition has gone way up this week. Mo Ibrahim, great back for the Gophers, putting up the yards, putting up over 150 yards a game. You know, as long as he's healthy, they're always deep at the running back spot anyway. So we'll see. It'll be a good game. This is one I'm going to go with Michigan State simply because they're the home team. I'm going with the Illini. I'm going with Michigan and Penn State, and I'm going to go with Michigan State here. Now, Indiana at Cincinnati, undefeated Indiana against one beaten Cincinnati. At Cincinnati, Cincinnati really took it to them last year. Actually, Indiana was in the game for a while, but then just sort of faded. It's a different Cincinnati team, and frankly, it's a different Indiana team. I'm still inclined to pick Cincinnati. But I'm going to go off. I'm going to go kind of against the grain. I'm going to pick Indiana, the visitors. Iowa at Rutgers, 2-1 versus 3-0. Now, what do Rutgers' wins look like? Actually, not bad. Boston College, that's a good win. Wagner 66-7. At Temple, a 2-point win. You know, that's two road wins. They're 3-0. I don't see this as an easy game. But Rutgers is not lighting it up offensively. I think here's the shocking thing of the quarterbacks going in. Spencer Petras has got better yardage numbers. He's only got one TD, but he's got better yardage numbers. He's completing just less than 50% of his passes. Now, the scary thing, Rutgers running back Salam has 137 yards on the season after three games, and he's the leader of all the, you know. So Gavin and LaShawn Williams have not put up much. And Caleb Johnson had 103 yards for the Hawks last week, but that's just one game in which he was featured. Again, Arlen Bruce with 127 yards is the leading receiver coming into the game for either school. So I think you're looking at two defensive teams. I think we saw last week the Hawkeyes have the offensive talent together. I'm going to say yes. I think it's another game back for Reganey and Keegan Johnson and Brody Brecht getting more experience. Arlen Bruce is going to continue to be Arlen Bruce, and I think we've seen an emergence of Caleb Johnson. So I'm going to go with the Hawks in this one. And how would I go against my own team anyway? Next up, Wisconsin at Ohio State. You know, Wisconsin's a decent team, but I'm sorry, Ohio State is just too much. They're too explosive. I think Ohio State by at least two scores. Miami of Ohio, 1-2 at Northwestern, also 1-2. Again, these are the kind of games Northwestern should win but ends up losing. And believe it or not, in their first two years back when they reemerged in 1995 and 96, would you believe that in both those years Northwestern lost to Miami of Ohio? Yeah. I'll go with Northwestern to win this time. It's in Evanston, and I think they're – Pat Fitzgerald's is a good coach. He's nothing close to an idiot. I think he knows he's got some issues, some execution and issues, and I think if there's anyone that can solve them, it's Pat Fitzgerald. And then the last one, Florida Atlantic, 2-2 going into West Lafayette to take on Purdue. More numbers for Charlie Jones, certainly, and I think Purdue wins this. But I think, you know, Captain Kirk nailed it. Empty stats. But I'll go with Purdue. So that's it, folks. I'm at the end of time. I've got to get going. And again, I apologize for this quick, impromptu need to come up with a program in this way. But it could not be helped. And again, please pray for my wife and her family as they're going through this. In the meantime, have a good week. Have a good weekend. A good rest of the week, and we will be back next week with a fuller program. I'll send you off with a nice reminder of Hawkeye glory days.
Play fake. Beathard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith.
Have a good one, folks. God bless.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.